Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this
and
Constitution,
so, my fellow Americans,
the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do.
This nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
It's Dave in the Hour of Truth. One more time, we're going to talk tonight with Congressman Mike McGee. He's running for Missouri 21. We're going to take care of that whenever the congressman comes along. He's just been invited to drop in at his convenience. I've got Lisa Payne-Nager here with me again tonight. Hi, Lisa.
Good evening, Dave. How are you tonight?
My Lisa of all trades. She's the producer of the show. She's the call screener. She's the sound monitor, and she's the co-host. I'm great. How are you, Lisa?
I'm doing just fine. A little busy.
Yeah, I'm telling you. So here we go. We're going to talk a little bit more about national politics as we tend to do the first couple of minutes of every show.
One, two, three, four.
No more the class war.
God bless them for their spontaneity. It's, you know, it's an independent people coming. It's young, it's spontaneous, it's focused.
And when you abolish capitalism, what are you going to replace it with, I wonder?
Socialism.
Really?
Yeah.
And what do you think is going to happen under socialism?
Well, we wouldn't have people unemployed.
Really?
We wouldn't have people
hungry. Kidding. What is the difference between North Korea and South Korea?
The workers in North Korea get paid.
Get paid.
Decent
really?
Yeah.
Really? And nobody imprisons them, nobody kills them, they're not dying from hunger,
no.
They do not resort to cannibalism, and people in South of Korea... Never heard of it. Really?
The Koreans are eating each other?
Really? You never heard of it?
God bless them for their spontaneity. It's, you know, it's an independent people coming. It's young, it's spontaneous, it's folk...
God bless them, Lisa. What a bunch of morons, including the lady who talked there at the end. That was, of course, Nancy Pelosi. This is a rerun on the National Minute from last time we did it. And we may rerun this once or twice more because, Lisa, there is so much in this little clip.
Well, I think Nancy's had her skin stretched a little too tight and it's cutting.
Last time we talked about Nancy and we talked about her little God bless them. And we talked about how this movement is neither independent, young, spontaneous, or focused. It's not any one of those four things that Nancy claimed it is, God bless her. Tonight we're going to talk about this moron lady that the guy interviewed that wants to replace capitalism. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, I think it's a little sad, and I think maybe we only have ourselves to blame in just a short way because... You know, the last several generations have grown up with not having the benefit of being taught what capitalism and communism really is and the seriousness of what it does to your culture.
Well, that's right. That's right. And I'll tell you what, one thing I noticed about this is that if you had asked any one of these people 4 years ago, 3 years ago, even 2 years ago, they would have denied that anything they stood for was socialist. Now there's no denying it. I mean, it's out there. It's in black and white. The Affordable Health Care Act is on paper. The TARPs are finished and have failed. So there's no arguing that what we're headed for is in fact socialism. And yet, those who are driving us there are bringing along with them literally millions of people who are calling for what is being sold to them without any clue as to what it is.
And they, well, you know, they have not been taught what it really is. When you and I were growing up, we were taught what socialism and communism it was and how devastating it was to the people who lived under that kind of oppression. And those generations did not have that, the benefit of that.
Right.
And when we were growing up also, communism was a dirty word. Look at how far we've come. It's a little astonishing if you know, for someone from our generation to look back and see what this generation just accepts so openly and so naively. It's scary.
It is true. It is true. And not only do they not know what socialism is, but I mean, we have Times Square totally full of people who don't even know what the world, workers in North Korea get paid a decent wage, is what this woman said was so great about socialism. I mean, so not only does this woman not understand what socialism is, but she doesn't know what's going on in the world around her. So what you got to do, what you have to be able to do is you have to be able to go to these people and say, this is the history of socialism.
I don't know
Greece,
if they can.
Greece, Italy. This is the history of socialism, Great Britain. This is the history of socialism, but they don't get it. They don't even get what's going on in the world. So I'm not sure that that's right.
They're not showing the oppression that the people are living under those conditions.
That's absolutely
government.
That's absolutely right. And that is what's happening in the nation tonight.
I will be held accountable. I've got 4 years. If I don't have this done in 3 years, then there's going to be a one-term proposition.
One-term proposition. Let's make it go. Okay, tonight we are going to deal with the Senate race in Missouri 21, Missouri Senate District 21. It's a very, very interesting race. It's one of the ones that I found most interesting, Lisa, because you've got a guy, Congressman Mike McGee, who's been representing Missouri 122. I'm checking on that now. Missouri 122 in the House of Representatives for 8 years, and that's the term limit, you know. So he's decided that he's not done representing the people that he works for, and he's going to run for a seat in the Senate. He's in Missouri 21 Senate District. That is a seat being vacated right now by Bill Stoffer, who's termed out. Bill's going to run for Secretary of State. And so there's a vacant seat there, and Mike McGee put his eye on that and thought he'd go for it. Unfortunately for him, I don't say unfortunately for him because this is going to be a good race, but I mean, whereas there are just a load, in fact, the majority of Missouri Senate races, unfortunately, aren't even going to sport a Republican primary. You've got David Pierce, who has been 4 years now representing in the Senate, Missouri Senate District 31. But David Pierce woke up one morning and found himself in Missouri 21 because of the redrawing of the lines. So now you've got these two guys, both with legislative history in Jefferson City, vying for this vacant seat. And so I was really looking forward to this. I did what we do here, as you remember, Lisa, is we get a hold of the candidates that are going to face off in the primary. And I want to just go into this for a second because this is totally fair. I go to their campaign website and I use the Contact Me page on their campaign website. And that's how I get in touch with them, because these are grassroots Missourians, and that gives these people a chance to, good grief, Lisa, I don't think you can say, well, I didn't see the email or I didn't see the message if it was sent to your Contact Me page on your campaign website. Do you think so?
I think that they pay very close attention to that. It's in their best interest to do so. Whether they choose to see it or choose to act on it or not is another story.
Yes. And Senator Pierce chose not to. So not only, listening audience, did he not want to come talk to you, but dear grassroots constituents, he didn't even want to respond to your request that he do so in one way or the other. I could live with a, I've got something else scheduled that night, or I could even live with, I don't like what you people stand for, so I'm not gonna let you question me. But Senator Pierce just chose not to make any contact with us at all. Senator Pierce is the proud sponsor of Senate Bill 455 in this last session. Now, I don't know if you've had a chance to review that, Lisa, but it's a Common Core bill. It requires that all 2- and 4-year universities develop a common core of 25 classes that can be transferred, that are so common that they can be transferred from one university to another without any difference in instruction or level of knowledge. What do you think of that?
Oh, well, you know what I think of the Common Core days. We talked last week how David Coleman of the College Board has just been appointed to the College Board. He is the architect of Common Core, and he's been appointed to the College Board. So I'm not surprised, and I am certain that we will see more of this kind of legislation popping up all over the country. Common Core has been a widely accepted process across the country already, from K-12 education. The final nail in the coffin is to hit the college level, and we will soon eradicate any kind of free thinking or critical thinking in any kind of learning institution anywhere in America.
Not only that, but you know, by putting this in at the college level, and I think you and Gretchen touched on this the other night, for any callers, hey callers, or for any listeners, hey listeners, we're here for you, 347-677-1835. Call on in and talk to us about what we're talking about here, or talk to us about David Pierce or Congressman McGee, or call in after Congressman McGee shows up and ask him a question. I'm sure he'd be glad to talk to you. But I think you and Gretchen touched on this the other night, but with Common Core moving from secondary into post-secondary school, what you're doing, and I don't know, this may be an objective, Lisa, of the people who think that public school is the be-all and end-all, but what you're doing is you are now forcing private schools and homeschoolers, and they're always looking for a way to get their hand in on the curriculum of private and home schools. You now force these people to teach that Common Core if they want their kids to go to college.
That's absolutely right, Dave. It's ingenious. You know, they've done a great job of flying it in under the radar. They will eventually eradicate any kind of freedom of choice in the educational field whatsoever.
It's
on its way.
Yes, and I expect that of the socialists. I expect that because indoctrination at a very young age is what socialism counts on. But to see a Republican / conservative House and Senate buy off on this is just heartbreaking, isn't it?
Well, the Republican-led legislature is the one who's been driving the bus on the Race to the Top initiative anyway. In Missouri, we have what's called Educated Citizenry 2020, and it's a mirror image of Race to the Top from the federal government, and the bus was driven by Jane Cunningham, who was supposed to be the education senator in our Missouri House, and she is a Republican, and her name was on the document. So those standards and all the criteria to initiate Race to the Top and open borders across school districts and Common Core standards have all been driven by the Republican House and Senate.
So SB 455, this Common Core in secondary schools, thank you, Senator David Pierce. He's the sponsor of that bill, and we now own it.
Did it die?
No.
It passed?
It passed. Senate Bill 635, listen to this. If you and I and three other people have a gated community or a 200-acre field that we build houses in, and we build ourselves a private road from the highway back into our little community, the state, if any one of the five people on that private road complains that it's not being maintained properly, the state will take over the road and take over the maintenance of the road and send us a bill. How do you like that?
Isn't that an eminent domain issue?
Well, yeah, it might be. Might be. But that's Senate Bill 635. Thank you, Senator David Pierce. He sponsored that. Want to talk a little bit about something that Republicans, conservatives like to, a word they like to throw around. We heard a lot of it during the Republican debates, crony capitalism. Senate Bill 881 gives a tax credit for anyone who uses processed biomass engineered fiber fuel. I don't know what the hell that even is, but I know that that someone, that enough people in the Senate like rewarding people who use processed biomass engineered fiber fuel, that they're going to give them a tax credit for doing so. Solyndra-ish. What do you think of crony capitalism coming out of our Republicans?
Well, I think that is, I think Republican is the definition of crony capitalism. After watching the Mosira and the China Hub situation during the special session last year, I don't know how you can define it any other way.
Yes, tax credit for processed biomass engineered fiber fuel. Thank you, David Pierce.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, your favorite, Senator David Pierce proudly announces himself as a co-sponsor of Senate Bill 526, the expansion of charter schools, passed what, next to the last day of the session? So there you have a brief recap of some of the more infamous bills sponsored or co-sponsored just in this last session by Senator David Pierce, who didn't want to come and talk to us tonight in spite of the fact that we promised to give him at least 48 hours view at the questions that we were going to ask. So I don't know. I don't know about grassroots. We're going to talk to Senator Mike McGee and see what he thinks of some things that are important to us at the grassroots. I didn't actually go and get a long laundry list of bills that Senator McGee had sponsored because I knew we were going to have him on the air tonight. And I did go get a long list of bills that Senator Pierce sponsored because I knew we were not going to have him on the air tonight. Do I sound too negative, Lisa?
Well, Dave, sometimes the truth hurts.
Well, yeah, that's I was talking with someone the other day about, excuse me for a second, I'm just getting over this cold, about what ought to be the first thing and the foremost thing that goes through any legislator's mind in determining whether a law needs to be passed or not. And it all boils down to making the assumption at the beginning that all liberty belongs to the people, that we are totally a people of free will and of unbound liberty, and that in order to maintain a civil society, then recognizing that if your dog barks too loud at night, I am at liberty to kill you over it. We need to make some laws that protect your liberty from my liberty. And so we make laws that say I can't steal your property. We make laws that say I can't kill you. We make laws that say I can't kidnap your children. And every legislator And here's where every one of these Common Core, private roads, tax credit for processed biomass engineered fiber fuel. Every legislator, when he or she looks at a bill, the first thing that goes through their mind had ought to be, does this bill protect Lisa from Dave's liberty? Is this bill necessary to protect Lisa from Dave? And if the answer is no, then the bill isn't necessary.
Right, because your freedom ends where it infringes on other people.
That's absolutely right.
Right.
And so I look down the list of things that passed in the last session, and I'm going to tell you, 90% of them, no, more than 90%, 95%, don't pass muster of that first question. Is this bill necessary to protect Lisa from David? Failing that, they're 90% bills that should never have even seen the light of day. We're going to take a little... Go ahead.
Last session, they wrote more than 2,000 pieces of legislation, and I haven't counted the pieces this year. It's probably more than 2,000 pieces of legislation, and to me, that is obscene and insulting.
Yes.
For me to send my tax dollars to Jefferson City to support a legislature that goes there with the expressed intent to maintain their success or to prove their success by writing new legislation. Their mindset should be, when at the beginning of every session, how can I decrease government? Which legislation can I get rid of? And if there is a need for any new legislation, to put it against the litmus test that you just spoke of, but for them to write that much legislation and to do it year after year after year is obscene and it's insulting.
That's absolutely right. And you know, the other thing that's insulting here is, and we're going to have, when the hour of truth is over, when the Republican primaries are said and done in August, we are going to switch the hour of truth to an educational format, and we are going to talk week after week after week about one element at a time of how some guy comes to Jefferson City and just sits at his desk one day and says, I need to write a bill. I think I'll write a bill about private roads and who's going to maintain those, and how that thought becomes a law that we have to live with. And people just don't – I would say the majority of our listening audience, Lisa, and we're talking about grassroots activist patriots here, the majority don't get it. There are – this guy writes a thing, he introduces it, it goes to a committee. That committee can totally change the bill in secret. I mean, we don't get to read the minutes of the committee meetings. We don't get to, I mean, when that committee meets to write amendments for this, they have a public hearing that we get to go to. But when they have meetings, those debates in committee, they're not aired out. Then a bill comes out of committee, which may or may not be anything like the bill that the senator who wants to do something with the roads sent. You know, the rabies thing that we talked about is a perfect example of this.
Because
that thing changed and morphed and changed and morphed so many times, and finally passed in a totally morphed version. And thank God for the House of Representatives. I mean, they neutered that bill before it got passed in the Senate. The Senate at first declined to accept the amendments of the House. And then, I mean, it comes down to the last day and there's no time for a conference. And they want to be able to go home and say, we did something for the veterinarians of America. And so they went ahead and passed the neutered bill. But I mean, the original bill written by a veterinarian, I understand. I need to research that. I didn't. Are you sure that's a fact?
Yeah, I've been told by reliable sources that
okay.
He's a veterinarian. So it's a lot.
Okay.
It's a lot of the issue.
Yeah, that said that I had to take my barn cat to a veterinarian to have it shot. Now, you know what? I go down to Race Brothers and I buy rabies vaccine for my dogs. and I give it to them. Can't do that anymore under the way this bill was written. And then the bill went into a committee, and it came out a little bit morphed, and it got passed by the House, by the Senate. And it went over to the House, and it went into a committee there, and it came out a little bit morphed. And then the House, I believe, the House just attached the amendments. They didn't do a House substitute. And they sent it back with some amendments that basically changed the whole thing to not require me to go to a vet and get a shot for my dog, and didn't even require me to get a shot, for that matter, for my barn cat. But basically the bill says what I thought the law had been all along, and that is if your dog bites somebody, you've got to be able to prove he's had a shot.
Sure.
Which is fine. I mean, you know, if my dog bites somebody, then I'd ought to be able to produce papers for the protection of Lisa against Dave. I'd ought to be able to produce papers that says my dog is not rabid. That bill would pass the muster. Is this bill necessary to protect Lisa from Dave? And yes, it is at that level. At a level where if my dog bites you, I'd ought to have to produce evidence that my dog has been rabies shot. Sure, that's a bill that passes that muster. Should I have to take my dog to a veterinarian and give him a shot, or I'm breaking a law? No, not only no, but hell no. It just had not ought to have to happen that way. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to either carry on with what we're talking about here, or we're going to talk to Senator or Congressman Mike McGee. We're waiting for him to call in, and we'll be back in 1 minute and 14 seconds.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
For peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
All right, Lisa, we're back. We're still waiting to hear from Congressman Mike McGee. And when he calls in, we'll get him on the air. He's agreed to talk with us tonight. And until then, we'll just continue with where we're at. So, you know, so then this thing, and this is something, well, you and I had a go around with this in one of Cunningham's bills. You know, these bills are sometimes already sitting in either a public hearing or a committee before people who care even know they exist. Isn't that right?
Well, that's right. I mean, everybody does have access to the web page, so you can surf the General Assembly web page to read the bills that are proposed. They do go up pretty quickly. However, once they become fluid, sometimes they can get lost in committee, and if there are modifications and changes, you don't see those modifications and changes until they've been voted on and approved. And, the argument for that is, I mean, we do have a representative government. You know, we do elect our leadership to go to Jefferson City to act on our behalf. The problem is we've allowed such corruption to grow and breed there that we don't necessarily trust our representative government to go and act on our behalf and do the right thing. So I on one hand, I would agree with you. Yes, it's a problem that this all takes place behind closed doors without the input of the public. And most often it comes out in a shape or a format that we don't like. If we want to change that, though, the answer in my mind is we need a major bloodletting in Jefferson City. If that kind of thing happens, we have to have the backbone to vote these people out of office. If they don't go to Jefferson City with a mindset that they're going to go and uphold the Constitution, uphold the statutes, go there to reduce some of the government that's already there, then whether or not there's an R or a D behind their name, they need to go.
I agree. And in fact, well, you know me, Lisa, I'm a libertarian, which means that I have as much distaste in my mouth for the Republicans as I do for the Democrats. In my mind, conservative, and I'm not talking about my conservative friends like yourself, who are conservative with a small c, but I'm talking about conservatives with a capital C, people who would call themselves either a branch of the Republican Party or even in some states a party. They don't necessarily want less government than the Democrats. They just want their government. I mean, that's the way I see it. And you're right. I mean, in those corners, that's where crony capitalism lives. That's where all of the same overreach. I mean, we're talking about bills proposed and in some states approved, voted on and passed into law that say you can't protest outside a military funeral. Bills that say you can't burn a flag. These are capital C conservative bills. Now listen, I served my country for 25 years. I'm as proud of the flag as anything in my life, and I think it's abhorrent, sickening that anyone would picket outside the funeral of a fallen soldier with signs that says his death is a result of our acceptance of gayness. But for 25 years, I didn't fight for a flag, and I didn't fight for a nice quiet military funeral. A military funeral should be full of honor. It should be full of respect. But I didn't fight for that respect. I fought for the rights of those picketers and for the rights of that guy that's burning the flag, as much as I hate it. And so, I mean, I got a little bit off track there, but you know, what I say is that a capital C conservative is no better in a libertarian's book than a capital S liberal. It's not that they want less government, it's just that they want their government.
Well, freedom and liberty is not always clean and nice. Sometimes it's a little messy.
It's not, that's right.
Not always comfortable either.
That's right.
Sometimes you have to be a little bit uncomfortable for everybody to have the same kind of freedom and liberty, and you have to live with that. And I think that's the idea where the left has diluted the message. You know, everybody has to be happy, everybody has to be equal, everybody has to be, you know, on the same level, same playing field. Everything should be nice all the time. It's not nice. Life is not nice, and freedom is not always nice.
It's not, and we don't just protect the speech we don't just protect the speech we like, or the actions we like. We protect the other ones too, and that's I read a sign on someone's Facebook page the other day that said, a democracy is when the majority rules, and a republic is when a democracy. In a democracy, the majority rules, and in a republic, we protect the individual from the majority, and that's just about right, isn't it?
Right.
So where I was going with that is that I was agreeing with you. I think it's time to take everyone who wants to represent us, everyone who wants to serve us in an office, and vet them individually against the very basics of liberty, against that number one question that I brought up earlier, that every legislator ought to ask before they consider a bill. And that is, every law, Lisa, is an infringement on liberty. Every law is an infringement upon liberty because we are born with the liberty, the God-given liberty, to do whatever we choose. God gave me the right. He tells me it's wrong, but he gave me the right to kill you. And in this mortal world, we do allow for the fact that in a civil society, I mean, he said, you know, it is against God's law, but he gives me free will to obey his law or not. And so in a civil society, we made these laws and these rules that protect you from me. And if a bill doesn't pass the muster of that test, then it's a bad bill. So in light of vetting every candidate and in light of throwing out the bums, did you hear that Barack Obama had an appearance in Denver?
No.
Yesterday, and they told the Republican National Committee told the sponsors that they could sell 700 tickets, and they sold 500.
And he was filling football stadiums a few years ago. What does that tell you?
What does that tell you? That's right. This guy has lost now. I mean, he's on his way out, Lisa. He's lost. He hasn't lost, but he's actually come close to uncommitted in one primary. He's come close to a convicted felon. Well, that's not even true. Let's back up on that. But a convicted felon a convicted felon in, I forget which primary it was, got a good number of votes. I'm going to say like 14%. I'm telling you that this guy, I was hearing Hannity today say that, that or the guy that was standing in for Hannity, I think, I forget who, but someone was standing in for Hannity today, say this might be the first election where a president's likability rating is not a good predictor of whether or not he can win, because people say they like President Obama, but that they don't want him to get another term in poll after poll. And I think those polls are wrong. I'm beginning to think people don't even like the guy. He can't fill stadiums anymore. He can't even sell 700 tickets in Denver, Colorado, for a rally. We can only hope that the time is coming when that's all over. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we are nearing about the last time that, we're nearing close enough to the end of the show that we'd ought to hear from Congressman McGee. And if we don't hear from him here pretty soon, we'll just move on and talk about his campaign and his record as though he had just not appeared. But I've talked to him on the phone several times. Talked to his wife, darling woman. And I know he's busy. He's got something going, and he had offered to take time out of that very busy schedule to come talk to us. So we're going to give him all the time he needs to call in. We'll go ahead and start talking about Congressman McGee, and when he calls in, we'll break what we're talking about and certainly get on with asking him the questions that we promised him we'd ask him. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back in a minute and 15 seconds.
Okay, Missouri Patriots, I don't have to remind you that our ancestors fought and died for our right to exercise our voices and shape government in the interests of the people. And yet, in most elections, less than 20% of the population bothers to vote. Gas prices are outrageous, the economy is a disaster, and we are being regulated to death. Bad government and weak leadership are destroying the American way of life on a national and state level, and it's time to send a message to Washington, D.C. and Jefferson City and tell them we have had enough. If you're not registered to vote, the deadline to be eligible to vote in the August primary is July 11th,
and October 10th for the general election in November. The Patriot Revolution begins in 2012, and it happens at the polls. Vote in the August primary and the November general election, and bring a friend. The Constitutional Republic depends on it.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Okay, we're back. We're expecting Congressman Mike McGee any minute now, and I'll just review the rules here real quick again, because we've already spent some time talking about David Pierce, and we will review what goes on here. Now, every one of these people is contacted via the Contact Us button in their campaign website, and they're contacted in ample time to get back with us. They're told that whoever accepts the invitation first gets to pick whether they're going to come into the first part or the second part of the interview. Congressman McGee got back to us first and picked the second part of the interview, and so we expect him any time now. We are into the second part, and then they are told, and I want to tell all of our listening audience this, so that you know what's going on. They are all told that they will be given the questions that they're going to be asked. We're not here to gotcha anybody. When I talk to a candidate before we start, I tell them that I'm not even going to review their voting record on these questions that I'm asking them, because I'm not here to do any gotcha. I'm here to ask them this question and give them a chance to tell you, the grassroots conservative constitutionalist, where they stand. I tell them what their audience is. And that's it. Now, I expect you to then take the information that they give you and do like an activist grassroots constitutionalist would do, and check what they say against their record. And you have a perfect chance to do that in this particular race, because you're dealing with two fellows who have a legislative history. I see Congressman McGee is here now, and we're going to get on with it. Good evening, Congressman. How are you?
Yeah, hi, Dave. Mike McGee.
Oh, good.
I'm not really a congressman yet. I'm a member of the House of Representatives, but I appreciate the pay bump.
Well, okay. That's the Missouri Congress, right?
Well, no. Actually, you got to go to Washington, D.C. to be a member of Congress. we're the Missouri legislature and the House and the Senate, and I'm a House member. I'm a legislator, not a congressman.
Okay. Well, speaking
but,
of
which, but I could use the money.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Representative McGee.
Yes.
Yeah. Speaking of being the fact that you are a legislator, we know that the session is over now. Tell me, does that mean that mean you're done working, or do you have things that you're going to keep on doing?
Oh gosh, no, I've been over to Pleasant Hill. I've been to Boy Scout, Eagle Scout, Court of Honor. Right now, I'm in Washington D.C. I was invited to come back. I did a prayer amendment. I started that 5 years ago to try to get prayer back into schools, and finally that passed last year. And the American Religious Freedom Conference invited me to come and tell them about it. We're the only state in the United States that's going to vote on that this next election. And it's a totally new thing here in America, and they want the other 49 states to maybe get on board. So they asked me to come back here, and they flew me back here to Washington, and I'm sitting here in Washington, D.C. It's kind of exciting, I tell you, to be in this place.
You're telling me then, Representative McGee, that this amendment is going to be on our ballot in what, November?
In August. The governor announced day before yesterday this will be on the August ballot, on the primary ballot, and it's a House Joint Resolution Number 2, if you want to look that up sometime. What it says is that you'll be able to pray to anybody that you like praying to at any time, as long as you don't disturb someone else. And what we had was we had a bunch of people come down to the Capitol, and one young lady came down and testified that she was in a prayer book group, and she brought her Bible to study hall in school, and they advised her not to do that. And another young boy, first grader, and he was singing on the playground, "Jesus Loves Me," and the teacher stopped him and told him, says, "Why don't you change that to Mommy Loves Me?" And he went home, told his folks, and his folks went back to the school and was upset. And then another girl came down and testified that she was getting ready to pray before lunch in the lunchroom and in high school, and they come over and said that really isn't appropriate. So what we're doing is changing the Missouri Constitution to put it more in line with what the U.S. Constitution is what it's going to be. And you'll get a chance to vote on it if you live in Missouri.
Yeah.
Kind of exciting.
It is quite exciting. I consider myself an activist, Representative McGee, and I never heard of this. I never heard of this. I'm really looking forward to seeing some back and forth on that.
Write that up sometime. House Joint Resolution Number 2.
I've written that down. Yes, I'm going to look at that when we're finished here, in fact, and maybe we'll talk about it some tomorrow night in our roundtable.
How can I serve you?
Well, you tell us. Tell us why you're running for this office. I mean, I've gone into the history of why Senator Pierce is running. I've gone into the history of you having spent the most of the time that you can in the House. But tell us what you love about this.
I've never followed politics, and a little over 8 years ago, the seat was open, and a guy named DJ Davis was in there. He's a Democrat and a great guy, and it was an open seat, and they were looking for somebody to run. And they came by and asked me to run. And my wife had told me that I had always complained that I'd never served in the military. I had a bad knee. I was in a motorcycle wreck during Vietnam, and her brother died in Vietnam, and my best friend died in Vietnam, and both of our families' fathers served in Korea in World War II, and just always felt bad about not serving. And she told me, she says, "Well, this is about as close as you're going to get. It's not quite the same, but maybe you can go serve your country by doing this." And so she convinced me to run. And we weren't really Republicans or Democrats. We just voted for the candidates we thought we liked at the time. Anyway, we came and ran for office and ended up winning, knocked a lot of doors and won and gone down there. And I'll tell you, I guess maybe I'm just falling in love with it, I suppose. I thought I was doing a short period of time and get out, and now I'm just like a junkie. I've got a shot in the arm, I suppose, and I get to help people all the time. I can go all over to different places and try to do some good, and it's been exciting. It's been fun.
Good. In 8 years now, why don't you tell us just real quickly the one piece of legislation that you sponsored that you are proudest of?
Well, I suppose this prayer amendment could be it, but I've done four that are just awesome. I think my very favorite one was the Welcome Home Medallion, and that had to do with the a medal that Missouri had never given out to its soldiers that served during Vietnam. And the other states had done that, and Missouri had about $180,000 that was designated just for medals and medallions for servicemen. And the money was sitting there, and I had an opportunity to do that, and I worked on that bill and got that passed. And then we got to go to the high schools and let them help try to design the medal, and it was kind of fun. It was kind of exciting to do, and it was neat to be able to see to it that my mother-in-law got that for my brother-in-law, that he lost his life in Vietnam. So
okay.
Kind of exciting. It probably isn't the big hitter as far as the state of Missouri goes, but it was exciting for me.
Meaningful. Not a big hitter, but certainly meaningful.
I think so.
The audience that you're talking to right now, almost to the person, almost to the man and woman, believes that our current tax system is unfair. And the majority, I would say, no, the majority I know, in fact, favor either a fair tax or a flat tax. Now, we've talked quite a bit here in recent years about how to get a fair tax into the state of Missouri. Why don't you tell us what you think about the current tax code, and if it's unfair, what's unfair about it, and what you think we'd ought to do to replace it.
Well, there's just too many tax credits out there. Number one, I went on a tour. There was a group of people wanting to change this tax structure, and I got on a bus and went to Tennessee and spent 4 or 5 days over there in Tennessee and visited with the governor and members of the legislature and different shop owners and business people, and they have changed that. Their tax structure is different than ours, and they've done well with that. And their state has turned itself around with that and is flourishing. And I think Missouri should maybe look at that also. It's kind of hard to change in the middle of the road, but there's been other states like Tennessee that has changed, and it seemed to work out good for them. And I would be an advocate of getting on board with that. I believe I would be more of a flat tax person. Would seem to make the most sense to me. It's easy to do this if you're starting a new country, have bought an island and started it. It would be the ideal thing would be to do the flat tax, but to get rid of all these tax credits and to get rid of all these people and all these deductions and all that, it's going to be a little tricky to do it. But I think we have the willpower, and I think we have the people in the state that have the mindset to do that, and I would be like to be a part of that.
Good, good.
Yeah.
This lady here beside me is Lisa Payne Nager. She is at Missouri Grassroots.
Lisa Payne?
Nager. Okay. Lisa Payne, okay. Payne / Nager. One of those two last name ladies.
Okay. Is Lisa okay, or do I got to do the whole thing?
Lisa will work just
Lisa
fine.
Lisa's work. Good. All right. Hi, Lisa.
Good.
Hi.
And at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, Lisa is the pro, the expert on education issues. So I'm going to pass the next question off to her.
Well, we could bump heads, I tell you that. Yeah. I'm not happy. I don't know about Lisa, but okay, go ahead.
Well, I think we probably are on the same page then. Okay, so in Missouri, the Constitution requires that we spend at least 25% of the budget on education, and we both know
right.
that we spend much more than that from K-20. And the number that I understand is closer to 50%, all the way, you know, K-20 through college. So with all of that money going to education, schools
now that
are
25% is only guaranteed for K-12.
Okay.
In the Constitution, not counting in higher ed. The Constitution is only K-12 at 25%. Okay, go ahead.
But we do spend, but K-20, we spend a lot more than 25%.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, yeah.
So it's a huge part of the budget. A huge part of the taxpayers' money goes to education in this state.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have unaccredited schools. Kids are entering college unprepared. They can't, achievement is bad. Do we agree?
We're on the same page, you bet.
Okay, so.
I have a plan.
Okay, so that was my question. So how do you improve the quality of education in this state and cut costs?
Well, I tell you, it seems if we could get a change of the rules, in St. Louis, the charter school situation is a little bit different. They can use private business there. In Kansas City, we can't do that. And right now, the guy that's running against me, he filed a bill. He wanted to speed up the operation of takeover Kansas City schools. I don't think the state of Missouri belongs in the school business. We need to just fix the system that's there and stay out of it and let the local control do it, let the elected school board members all over the state run the schools. And now if we can change the system to where the rules are that let's say we could do something. I'm not big on tax credits, but what if we could convince somebody like Hallmark or Ford's or Cerner's or somebody like that to get into charter school business? Each one of them with one school. And maybe it'll take a tax credit, or maybe it'll take some type of incentive to get them to do that. But the end result is, because of those failing schools, 52% of all the people that are incarcerated in Missouri right now come from Kansas City and St. Louis and the inner city. The seventh largest school district is in the prison because they got to get their GED before they can get early parole. So we're spending all this money. Why not put a few more bucks, try to do some incentive? Could you just imagine if Hallmark Cards would take on one school, and whether it be elementary through 12 or just maybe a high school, And they sponsored one school, and that school would be having to do with, maybe an art magnet school. And Ford Motor Company would take on another school, and they all have to put money back in the communities anyway. And so maybe they could come back and take over school. They've got all these people that run this. They've got all these smart people that work there. And then Ford Motor Company, maybe they would do a school on robotics. And maybe Cerner would get on board, and they could do one school that would be in have computers or something like that. And then the other schools that are maybe close to Raytown, we will move that school, that high school or grade school, into the Raytown School District. We'll have Independence pick up whatever's close to Independence. South Kansas City take in something out in Grandview, and maybe North Kansas City will come down and take another school there. And then the balance of those schools, convince those big corporations, whatever they might be, like that big law firm in Kansas City, it's got a 10-story building or whatever that is, convince those people to invest in the Kansas City School District and take over one school as a charter. Let them send their management team go in there and operate that, educate those kids, and then when those kids get out, they can come to work for Hallmark or Ford or Cerner's, or maybe somebody in Germany at some other car plant would come back and say, you know, these people are teaching robotics here, and then they could go on to college from there. And
well,
why not these kids that are starting in elementary school right now, the first graders, why don't we look at a program to say, hey, we're not trying to get you to fourth grade, we're trying to get you to college. Let's go ahead and sign you up with Lincoln, or let's go ahead and sign you up with UMKC or somebody like that at first grade, assign you a dorm, and that's the end result for you. And have those kids that are in that dorm every two or three years stay in touch with that family, with that mom and dad, and with that child, and say, hey, we've got this place ready for you. We expect you to be here. And come down and use that as part of their college education to work with those students to get them to that goal, to get them up to that college.
Is this a totally novel idea, Representative McGee, or has this actually succeeded somewhere?
I don't know if anybody ever did it before. It's just something I've been working on for about a year, and I thought, you know, why not? We've got expertise. We got smart people here running these huge corporations. Why not tie them in with the people that's going to end up working for them somewhere down the road? I don't think that they want uneducated people coming to work at Hallmark. They don't want them. Ford doesn't want them. Cerner doesn't want them. Let's let them go ahead and try to educate them and take on one little bitty piece. And wouldn't that be great to think that Hallmark High School would be competing against Ford High School or Cerner High School or something like that, and with all the expertise and the dollars that they have and the intelligent people, that I know that they could end up taking these schools one-on-one, not a big conglomerate. And then the rest of that school district, I bust it up. It's just too much weight at the top. You know what that guy makes down there? Dr. Green that runs that, $250,000 a year.
It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, Nicastro, the commissioner, $185,400. The governor only makes $133,000, and the commissioner gets $185,000.
It's all right. That's all right. The governor's enterprise is failing as much as the school, though.
I'm just in awe. They only give me $34,000.
Ah, it's amazing, isn't it? Yeah, this I agree with you. Go ahead, Lisa. You have you.
Hey,
move
well,
on.
I'm kind of getting off script here, and I just wanted to follow up with that question a little bit. So, what does that do to local control and parental involvement if you have corporations taking over schools?
Well, I think the parent involvement would be on the school board. They'd be a part of that. I would think, okay, then let's say Ford or Hallmark or Cerner, or, you know, maybe it wouldn't be any of those three. Maybe it would be three or four other people or other corporations. But then they would go ahead and set up that school board, and they would have moms and dads from that school be a part of their school board, and they would just be there to advise and to observe and to give them direction and to give them ideas. Those parents want their kids to succeed, and I think they would be thrilled to think that somebody from Cerner would come and sponsor that school. I think that school would be packed immediately. The same way with Ford or Hallmark's or that group of attorneys or you know, just any of those big corporations downtown Kansas City. I think they would pack a school to be a part of that because they know that they're going to be able to be successful because those businesses are successful. Those people don't know how to lose.
So these would
That's
be
what mag- we need to run in our schools.
These would be magnet schools. There'd be no boundaries, or these would just be magnets, right?
Well, they'd be magnet schools, but on the other hand, we passed a school bill this year that puts the magnet schools or the charter schools to under the same thumb of having to do the same testing and coming up with the same rules that we're doing with public schools. And so we're bringing them in compliance. You know, one of the big things we need to do, we need to look at doing a – I got too many phones ringing here. Hold on a second. Why don't we test these kids? You know, they're changing schools all the time. They just took 3,800 or 3,600 kids in St. Louis and closed down the school and moved them out. Why not test those kids when they start at the new school and not penalize that school because all of a sudden now the test scores are coming down to the school? But let's go ahead and test those kids as they start that school year and then test them at the end of the school year and then say to that school, have you made progress with that student? That's the answer, not where they have either built the whole school up or lowered the test scores of the whole school. It's only what has happened with that one student. And the only way we know that is to test them at the first of the year and test them at the end of the year. We don't do that now. We test them at the end of the year and say, oh, boy, this school's not good. This school's not accredited. Well, did that student just start there? Well, maybe they did and maybe they didn't. I don't know. Or maybe the teacher got 10 students that was 3 years behind already or something, and now we want to maybe penalize the teacher. I don't know. I think that's wrong.
Let's talk about the testing a little bit then. You know, so if we've got charter schools and the House and the legislature approved the expansion of charter schools across Missouri, and charter schools are public schools, even if, you know, a Hallmark.
That's tax dollars, you bet, yeah.
Yeah, they're paying for that, you know. So now charter schools are public schools, and they do fall under the mandates of Common Core since we have adopted Common Core in Missouri. Yes?
Correct.
So how do you feel about Common Core standards?
You know, what is common? Back in my hometown, at Lee's Summit and Odessa, is common with inner city St. Louis or Kansas City. I don't think that those are fair assessments because they're already so far behind.
Well, Common Core standards are the mandates that come from the federal government.
Exactly. And do you expect whoever takes those 3,800 children from that school that was behind, or from the one of the schools down in Kansas City that had a graduation record of what? 38%, I think, is one of them was one of the lowest ones at a graduation rate of 38%, and take some of those students and then move them to another school, and all of a sudden that they say, well, now the school has fallen behind, and their test scores are low. Should we penalize that school? No, I don't think so, unless we know where that student is coming in. That would only be fair.
Kind of as a segue to Lisa's next question, Representative McGee, the thing I find really dangerous about Common Core is, and now we've actually graduated, thanks to your opponent, those Common Core standards into post-secondary education.
Yeah.
But when Common Core is what it takes to get into a college, when Common Core is the way to go, you are penalizing either private schools and homeschoolers, or you are forcing them into your agenda.
Well, I'll tell you what, some of the brightest kids that we've got here in the state of Missouri come out of homeschools. I got to tell you right now that they and the private schools, these Catholic and parochial schools, really turn out a good product. And the homeschoolers that come to visit me and the ones that are in those spelling bees, boy, they just do tremendous. You know,
right.
I mean, there are a few that fail, fall through the cracks, sure. But I think the majority of those homeschoolers are very successful and really do a good job. I've been real proud of the majority of those homeschool kids. So,
well,
you know, what are you going to do?
Part of homeschooling success is that the parents can guide and nurture the education for those kids to feed their, to meet their individual needs. They don't have to fall under Common Core as it stands now. That they'll have to do that to get their kids into college now, because Common Core has creeped its way into the secondary post secondary education. But there is a pledge that candidates and electeds have been asked to sign on the Homeschooling United website that asks elected representation to advocate for the freedom of home educators to maintain their autonomy from federal, local, or state mandates that impose regulation on educational standards, curriculum, testing, or registration. How do you feel about that?
You know, I wouldn't have a problem signing on to that and be a part of that, and I may have already. I'm a part of several things like that. But the homeschoolers at the Capitol building hang out in my office, and their parents come there. I'm the one that they come to do the tours and get their flags, and I do their resolutions, and I do all those things for those groups. And I think they're tremendous, and I would do whatever I can, you know, to nurture the homeschoolings. So
okay,
that's just where I'm at with that program. You know, I know there's some problems there, and with the college and the different things that they don't get to do, and it has to do with sports and some problems, you know, getting in the band and different things that they need to do. And somehow we need to work around that and nurture that and get them that opportunity, because the parents want to step up to the plate and do the right thing and really see to it their kids get a good education. Shouldn't keep them out of band, or shouldn't keep them out of cross country, or, you know, doing something like that. And I'd like to be sure that they have that opportunity. So
great. One of those pledges is on its way to you right now.
Okay, Representative McGee, we're going to take, if you'll stick with us for just a little bit more, we're going to
Hang in there with you.
We're going to take a 1 minute break, and we'll be right back, and we'll move on. Thank you very much,
okay.
Sir.
Okay.
Jobs, taxes, traditional family values, education, protecting the unborn, Second Amendment, tort reform. These are the issues facing Missourians today. Hi, I'm Terry Varner. As your next state senator, I will continue to work to change government by preserving our liberties, reining in wasteful spending, and making the state of Missouri responsive to its citizens. I am a pro-life constitutionalist who believes our state and federal constitution are there for protection from overreaching government. I firmly believe that only by ignoring those documents has the government at all levels been able to trample on the liberty of its people. I would appreciate your vote this August 7th. I'm Terry Varner, and I approve this message.
I've got a feeling that the night is turning.
Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
Okay, I'm going to send you back.
Okay, we're back now. We're back now. We're talking with Representative Mike McGee. He's running for the Senate seat in Missouri 21. And thank you for holding on, Representative. We're gonna move on now away from education. And okay, Lisa, go ahead.
Okay, so the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, it has tremendous power in the state of Missouri, and it often usurps the legislature in accepting federal funding for programs. So what's DESE's role, as you see it, in the future of education in Missouri?
I'd like to shut them down. It's time to empty that office out, as far as I'm concerned. It seems like a lot of people earning a lot of money that we could spend on teachers. We got teachers at $27,000 a year, and these people are making, you know, $185,000, some of them, and some of the rest of them $70,000-$80,000. It's just ridiculous, and I don't see that they're really getting the job done. We're spending too much at the top and not enough in the classroom, and I would really thin that department out if just not almost close it out completely. That money needs to be separated out and sent down to the schools and gotten into the classroom and get it out of Jefferson City. If it's not in the Jefferson City schools, it's got no business being there.
Well, there you go. There you go. And I think it's only fair, I guess, that we spend 25% of our money on education, and education is 25% of our problem, that we spend 25% of our time here on education. There's no problem. I don't have a problem with that. It's one of the top issues to everyone in the state of Missouri. Tell me, Representative McGee, what in the world happened to HB 1534, the nullification?
1534.
Yeah, the nullification of the Affordable Health Care Act that you guys on your side did the right thing with, and when it went across the hall, it died.
Oh, to get rid of the health care. Yeah, trying to get a little rough with Barack, with the president.
Yeah,
yeah, but the majority of the bills that come out go to the Senate and just get put to sleep. It's just like they've got the death penalty when something goes over there, and it's just and I don't know what the reason for that is. Many of those people used to be in the House and served with us over in the House side, and then they go over to the Senate and drink the water, and I don't have the answer, but there's a lot of good men and women there, but it just seems like it's just hard to get anything through over there. But I can't really speak for them. I'm just trying to hold down my House seat and listen to debate and trying to do the best I can on my side of the building.
Tell us in as few words as you can, given the 9th and 10th Amendment to the United States Constitution, how sovereign do you think our state should be?
How sovereign? Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Do you think the EPA doesn't belong? Do you think the FDA doesn't belong? Do you think that?
Well, you know, we've got to have some rules to go by, or people will be flushing in the streets. You know, and I think we've got to have some rules, but they are crippling our communities. EPA for one, you know, just in sewer treatment plants. By the time they get up to code, they come out and make a new rule. The same way with the electric plants, you know, the electric generator plants. You say, wow, by the time they get that figured out and they bring it up to what that rule is, then the rule changes on them. And it's just ridiculous. There's another group that needs to be brought under control and just say, hey, you know, I don't want bad air. I don't want bad water. I'm leaving this to my grandkids. I want things to be neat and clean, but there's a limit to what we can do, like on this pipeline coming through here, coming across my district. And I think it's a good idea. Why not replace an old pipeline with a new pipeline? That just makes sense to me.
So I
put
mean
people to work? Gosh. Yeah.
But here we said in Jefferson City, Missouri, I mean, how do we make that happen? How do we make that happen, Mike?
Well, I'll tell you what, the state bureaucrats, a lot of the people have been there a long, long time, and we pass rules, we pass laws, and then they take those and tweak them and move them around, and by the time it comes back to the public and it comes back to my cities and my communities, a lot of times I'm disappointed when leadership gets with me, like I say, at the sewer treatment plant, or you know, somebody gets with me with the highway department or something like that, and say, here's what they've done. I say, well, you know, that's not really what we passed. That's not what we talked about on the House floor. And sometimes we need to thin those agencies out. We've got too many people in state government. I'd like to get rid of a bunch of us House members. We've been doing a bill, and we got 163 members. It's time to get rid of 40 of us. There's no doubt about that. We could do just as well. We've got too many people working down there in the House and in the Senate. It wouldn't be bad at all to get rid of 6 or 8 people in the Senate and at least 40 people in the House, and trim that down. You could each representative could take care of could do the job just fine with no more staff.
I'm of the opinion that it doesn't matter if you guys down there meet for 60 days or 420 days that everything that we need to know is going to happen in the last week. Do you think we could shorten this session or spend less time?
Well, let me see. This year we heard about getting a new state butterfly. That took quite a bit of time.
Yeah, that was
a waste of time away from my grandchildren. We talked about ballroom dancing being a credit in school. We had quite a bit of conversation about that. Now, why would we even bring that up? You know, I'm just thinking, I don't think it would hurt a thing to shorten up the time down there, you know, take 30 days off of that. It wouldn't hurt a thing. And we'd get down to just the strict business of what we had to do. We'd take care of the budget. We'd take care of necessary things. We can name some highways after some highway patrolmen or some veterans that lost their lives and, you know, the things that really kind of need to be done and clean that up and get the heck out of there. The state's a lot better shape the last time we're in session.
I'll tell you what, for my part, you get that done and I won't pay you any less money for working 30 less days. How's that sound?
Well, it's hard to make ends meet on this $34,000 already.
I'll tell you. We're going to move on now because this is important here. And in Missouri, month after month after month, we are in the top states for new jobless claims.
Okay.
I know we're talking about having improving numbers, but the number of people that don't have a job, irregardless of how we fidget with the numbers, is not an indicator that things are getting much better. What are we doing wrong here?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm not much of a tax credit guy, but the thing we did over at Ford Motor Company turned out pretty good with that $500 million of new infrastructure, and we looked like we could have had a thing with Cerner, and that didn't come out of the Senate to where we could get that put together. We thought maybe we were going to have that here where Bannister Mall is. I don't know if you're familiar with where that's at or not. But they tore down a whole shopping center, and the Cerner was going to put 6,000 jobs there, and that never made it out of the Senate. But, you know, I'm not big on the tax credits. I think that we could do something like I know of somebody in a little town of Bates City. There is no senior citizens housing there, and that would put a 20-unit complex there. But it wouldn't even break even. If somebody would just give them some kind of a tax credit that they could break even for the first two or three or four years to where it started breaking even for them or started making a few dollars, they'd put probably $1.2 million into that complex and put a lot of people back to work. For just a short thing, international trade. Look at that highway. Maybe some rapid transit, air passenger stuff. Maybe a small nuclear plant. We're talking about the Callaway 2 plant down there. Maybe doing some type of an expansion down there. I think all of those things are good if we could just move forward on that and. We're going to need to have the power. Everybody wants these electric cars and talking about them, and everybody wants new microwaves, but the coal plant, I guess Barack's going to shut all them coal plants down eventually. We're going to have some type of energy here to just keep the microwave running, keep the refrigerator going. So that's a tremendous amount of jobs, but it seems like it just stalls. We're not moving forward for it. So
Lisa's waving her hand over there. She's got another question for you. Lisa, go ahead. Okay.
Well, there's a lot of talk about Agenda 21.
Okay.
And how it affects the local and state governments, and how do you propose you deal with Agenda 21 issues in Missouri?
I'm not real on top of Agenda 21. Can you you fill me out what it is that you want me to discuss, what part of that you want me to talk about?
Well, Agenda 21 is the UN's proposal for sustainable development and one world government, actually, and it's filtered down all the way down to local levels. It has to do with property rights and other things along that.
You can put me down as a note. I'm an American citizen. I don't want to split that with the Canadians. I'm not going to split that with the people south of the border or north of the border. I would like to keep America, United States of America, right here within the borders, and I'd like to close the borders down that we have now and spend less time overseas and spend more time here at home.
Great.
I would be negative to having international money. I'd be negative to international leadership. That would be a big negative to me.
Well, I'm going to take a sidetrack here for 2 seconds and tell our listening audience that beginning the middle of June, and I'm not sure what date yet, we are going to add a 1 hour per week segment to Missouri Grassroots Radio, folks, which is going to be education on exactly what Agenda 21 is and how you're how you already see that creeping into your local and county governments. Congressman, we're going to wrap up here real quick, so I want to ask you...
you keep giving me that raise.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. Representative McGee.
That's all right.
I want to ask you to tell me that when you get to the Senate chamber in January of 2012, what two bills are going to be on the top of the stack in your briefcase?
I'm going to do something first with these schools in the Kansas City and St. Louis. I'd like to... It'll give me a little time to put some polish on this a little bit, but I really think that we can get some big businesses down in Kansas City to get on board. They want educated workforce. They don't want Kansas City to be a failing school district because to attract other businesses. I think I've got something here, and I'm going to move forward with it, and then try to see if we can go somewhere with getting some corporations, just with one school, one big business with one school, and maybe another one, and then another one. And I want to push this this idea of these kids starting first grade having a college dorm assigned to them. I think it's important to set their goals to where they're going to end up. If you set their goals that they're going to end up getting out at ninth grade because dad got out at ninth grade, then that's where their goals are going to be and that's where they're going to end up. I want their goals to not be to finish high school, but to say, hey, I'm going to college. That's my dorm room. I'm going up and visit it when I get to be third grade. My mom is taking me there. I'm going to go on a bus or I'm going to somehow we're going to get these kids up there and visit their dorm room, and I'm going to have those kids come down, and the college kids come down and visit those students and say, hey, here's a picture of your room, and I'm saving it for you. And when they paint it, I'm going to have them send them a picture. We painted your room, and I got it looking good for you. You got to study. You got to get in that math class and get yourself together because you got to study biology because you're coming up here. You got to have that course. And I think that enough encouragement that we can turn this situation around and make Kansas City a great place to live and the inner city of St. Louis the same way.
Well, your passion is quite noticeable on this. What's second in the stack?
Oh gosh, I'd like to see this prayer bill go somewhere, and I'd like to see kids maybe pray in school, maybe pray for our country, pray for leadership, pray for our president, pray for our Congress, maybe. I don't know. I think that our founders of our country they thought a lot of the Lord, and I think that maybe if we can get maybe a little closer to Him, maybe the Lord will shine a little bit more on Missouri. I don't know. Maybe that seems foolish to many, but we need to make some changes.
Out here in this listening audience specifically. There's a lot of, I'm hearing a lot of disappointment about the 2012 session. What one bill in 2012 that passed and is being signed by the governor are you most disappointed in?
Oh, gosh, I'll tell you the truth, I can't put my finger on anything. I'll tell you something that was good. Let me give you this. This is the first year in my 8 years that when it come down to passing the budget, that almost all the Democrats voted with the Republicans and passed the budget pretty much unanimously. And if you pull that up, all 12, 13 of those budget bills, you'll see that when they were agreed to and finally passed, they were passed by both sides of the House of I don't know what happened in the Senate, but I know over in the House, the Republicans and the Democrats, and they praised each other about working together to pass the budget of what seemed fair for both sides. And I don't think in the 7 years prior to this that that have ever been the case. And I was taken by that of how pleased the Democrat side of the aisle was with Republicans, because we got 105 people, we can just do whatever we want to do. But it didn't turn out that way. You know what I'm saying? It didn't turn out that way. They worked together and did something that both the whole chamber was happy with, and I'm thrilled with that.
Okay, we're down to 5 minutes. Tell us why you're the better guy for this than David Pierce.
Oh gosh, I don't know. David Pierce is a nice person. He's a good, decent man, but I think he's all off on the schools. He is the chairman of education right now. He's in charge of all of education in the state of Missouri. Probably next to Castro and the governor, he's the next highest ranking person, and he's had opportunity to fix this thing or to make some change, and we see nothing. And I think that that's. Let me tell you a quick story. You got a minute?
We got 4 minutes.
I went to Kansas City Schools, and I left there in 1966, illiterate. I was not able to read and write. And I never learned to read and write until I was 20. And I moved away and went to work for an uncle of mine, and he found out that I wasn't able to read and write and sent me to a bunch of schools and different things and tried to get me to learn to read. And through a process that by the time I was 21, that I'd come around, by the time I was 22, I was able to read a newspaper. But I had never read a book, was unable to. My brother and sister were the same way. My little brother left school at, I think, at 14. My little sister at Kansas City Schools at 15. And 50 years later, it's still that way today. And I've had enough of it. I think it's time to fix it.
I think you're right. What a story. What a story.
I think it's time for a change. And my dad worked at Ford Motor Company. He's a good man. My parents never beat me. I had a stay-at-home mom. It was a good thing. We had a nice home. We just went to Kansas City Schools and just left, all three of us, illiterate, uneducated, and I'm sad. And 50 years later, it shouldn't be the same. It's time for a change.
I'm telling you, that's a story we can wrap up on. You tell us and all these people listening how to contact you, where your website is, and how to send you money, most importantly.
Well, that's really neat. My name is Mike McGee, and my website is Valita. It's Valeta. At wcblue.com.
Okay, that's Valeta at wcblue.com.
Yeah.
To contact you, okay?
Yeah, they can call me at home. I don't care. Yeah.
Well,
I'm the only guy in the legislature in 8 years that's put his phone number on his business card, so I'm really not too smart, I guess, but I want my constituents to find me if they're looking for me.
Well, good. I think that's great. Tonight we've talked with Representative Mike McGee. He's running for the Senate in Missouri Senate District 21, running against David Pierce, who currently serves in Senate District 31 and woke up one morning and found himself in Senate District 21. So, we've got two guys. I tell you all, listen to this. Go back and play it again. Listen to what Representative McGee has to say. Some stuff is really, really good. Really, really good here. And we want you to go and look him up. Look everybody up. Don't take our word for anything. You go to senate.mo.gov or House.mo.gov, and you can look these guys up and see what they stand for. And Representative McGee has not been a bit bashful about telling you what he stands for. Thank you very much for coming along, Representative.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Lisa, for visiting with me.
I look forward
to talking to you in the future, Lisa.
I'll be in touch. You can bet on it.
All right. Lisa, you want my phone number? You need my home number? You got it.
Okay, I will put you on hold here, and I will get it from you.
All right.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.